Welcome to the Holistic Anxiety Fix Podcast, where we explore the many different root causes of anxiety so you can learn how to heal naturally and reclaim your love for life.
So welcome, Prince. I am really excited to have you here today to be talking to us all about neurofeedback. And I know I've worked with you personally around neurofeedback, and I got so excited about our work together and what we were discovering that I kind of wanted to share the neurofeedback world with everyone else, which is why I've invited you to chat with me today. So welcome.
Thank you. Really excited to be here.
Yeah. So let's just dive right in today and talk a little bit more about neurofeedback and what it is and kind of give our listeners a little bit more information about it.
All right. So yeah, first of all, as introduced, I'm Prince and I work here as the head neurotherapist at the Hoffman Center. So neurofeedback, I know even in the mainstream discussion of neuroscience and neurotherapeutic interventions, it's really not, you know, taking the main spotlight. So for some people, when they hear neurofeedback, it's like, first reaction, what is that, right? Some people are more conversant with the broader term called biofeedback. Biofeedback, as we already know, is re-measuring biophysical parameters, or I'll say indices, say like breathing rates, heart rate variabilities, and stuff like that, but with the purpose of feeding that information back to the patient and giving them techniques on how to modulate those activities based on what they're seeing. So it's a way of self-regulating.
Okay, right? So sort of like, you know, the HeartMath tool. So for those that are familiar with HeartMath, we're measuring the heart rate. And if I see my heart rate is bananas, then I know like whatever I'm doing to calm it down isn't working. And so then I can sort of change my style and say, well, does, if I breathe this way, does it work? Or if I think about something happy, does it work? That's kind of an example of biofeedback.
Exactly. That's right. So yeah, but that, and even in, say for instance, EMG, people that have done even muscle tension, we use that a lot as well, because sometimes we don't even know that we're tensing our muscles. We don't even know we are not as relaxed as we should. So with the biofeedback piece, you have a visual display of, you know, your muscle tension, and you're then given autogenic exercises on how to regulate those muscle tension and relax them. And then you start feeling, you know, that rejuvenating experience from that relaxation itself. So with neurofeedback is now biofeedback, but more directed towards the brain, right? So with neurofeedback, it's using monitoring devices that provide you with a moment by moment information on how our individual states, especially, you know, psychological states, right? So it gives you a real-time information on your brain activity. And by brain activity, I mean the EEG, electroencephalograph, right? So you have a real-time display of that brain activity to teach you self-regulation of brain function, right?
Okay.
And it's really not a recent development. This have been really, really long time now, right?
Really? Because, I mean, it's just sort of hitting pop culture, so to speak. So I assumed it was actually a very new development.
No. We've had neurofeedback practices, of course, in much cruder form than it is today. We have work, you know, going all the way back to even the 1940s.
Wow.
Yeah, but then it's in the 1960s, thereabout, that you start having some mainstream research taking, you know, taking neurofeedback out there and using it for real clinical work. And so leaving the research, you know, field more to the clinical area of things. So we have neurofeedback initially used in the treatment of seizure, right?
Okay.
Yes. And that's where, and I'll take some time to explain how neurofeedback works. And then it will make more sense why it actually works with things like seizure and anxiety and depression and a host of other things. But yes, it didn't start with that. Very few collection of psychotherapies that it actually was used for initially.
And now what do you use it for?
Well, a host, as I said, a lot of things.
Okay.
neurofeedback. The question is, and here's where I'll just back up a little bit. Here's where the problem actually lies in the field, is that you have people, some people in one end of the spectrum, other people at the other end of the spectrum. So some people believe neurofeedback can be used to address every psychopathology, everything, every problem. You have almost like a snake oil, right?
Okay.
Neurofeedback, you're good. And other people believe, well, it's just rubbish. It doesn't work. Mm. Well, no. The fact is there are certain psychopathologies that neurofeedback can help in of itself. But most times it has to work synergistically with other forms of therapy, right? To really work, because any form of dysregulation in health or disruption in our physiology doesn't really happen from one single event or one single area of individuality. Yet there are several things that come together to really cause illness, so to say. So the same thing, neurofeedback would be one component among others to help you go back to balance. So,
okay, so your sort of philosophy then is like there's very specific roles neurofeedback can play. Exactly. But if you're coming for something like, you know, healing anxiety, it's not necessarily going to cure all of anxiety, especially if there's other causes of it, but it helps with it, so to speak.
Yes. And okay. That is precisely my point. And that's our approach here at the Hoffman Center. And that's what actually distinguishes us. Is that when you practice holistic medicine, you don't just look at, for example, anxiety as a problem in the brain, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what most people, that's where many people get it wrong, is that, oh, I'm anxious. Something is wrong up here. I'm depressed.
Yes.
Something's wrong up there. I'm, you know, yeah.
I hear this so many times from so many women, like it must be, you know, neurochemical imbalance. It's all in my brain. I just need to think better. I just need to try harder. I just need to calm down. And so there's so much focus in everywhere about it just being a brain issue. And I think that's why it's easy to be like, well, if I get to neurofeedback, it'll fix my brain and then I'll be fine.
Yeah. And when they try neurofeedback alone and they don't get the profound results they are looking for, then they write neurofeedback off as, it doesn't work, right? It's not a scientific approach to evaluating the efficacy of anything.
Okay. Right?
So the same thing with surgery or any other form of therapeutic intervention. You do need a host of other things. After the surgery, sometimes you have to do some, you know, physical therapy. You need a few other things to really get back to health, right? You can't just pick one and run with it.
Right. So it's important to look at, you know, things like diet and lifestyle and infections and all these other things, but neurofeedback itself can be a really, really powerful tool. So if we're looking at neurofeedback for anxiety, how do we know that we need it and how effective is it?
Okay. So to answer that question, I'll start by first discussing, I'm sure many of your listeners will want to know, what again is neurofeedback? Because it's good to know.
Yes, we should probably start there, right?
Exactly.
What exactly are we talking about here?
Yes.
And I know when I first walked into your office, I had no idea what to expect. You know, when you turned on Netflix, I was like, what are we doing with Netflix?
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you do neurofeedback in office and then maybe how we do it remotely and what it actually does.
Yes. So neurofeedback actually bridges a gap in our capacity of our brain to function. See, and I'll back up just to explain what that is. So our brains are really, as we all know, is an awesome, awesome organ. That one thing that our brain cannot do is know how it is doing in comparison with the brains of other people, right? So the brain doesn't somehow telepathically communicate with other people to say, hey, this situation in front of me, is my reaction okay? Is my reaction normal, so to say, in airports, right? So it cannot tell that. All it does is just react. And those reactions of the brain can be determined by a host of things, say from neurotrauma, it could be from your experiences, it could be from adjustments you've made throughout your life as a result of stressful jobs or stressful relationships, and all that slowly have caused these, you know, systematic dysregulations in your brain, right?
So kind of like a straw, like I always like the analogy of the straw that broke the camel's back. So those tiny things are building that haystack.
Exactly.
Okay.
So all these compounds to bring about the way we respond to situations. And for some people, when that is excessive or even not rooted in normal behavior as expected by our society, we term that anxiety. Or right. Someone could even go up to the manic kind of expression, right? Well, with neurofeedback, what we are doing is trying to retrain the brain. And I'll repeat that, retrain. So neurofeedback is just workout for your brain. We are training your brain to do what you're currently doing, but approach it different, right?
Okay.
And how we do that is using a system of reward. So this, again, for those of you that have a little bit of psychological background, this goes back to condition in psychology, mm-hmm. which is one form of learning, right?
Yeah.
So we know that when you reward an individual to perform a certain task, they are more inclined to do that task.
So if you were to give me like chocolate for showing up on time, I'm going to be more likely to show up on time because I love chocolate.
Exactly. That's okay. It. Our brain is no different. In fact, our brain loves reward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can reward, but when I'm saying rewarding your brain, you might wonder, what do you mean by rewarding your brain? Yes, you can also say reward you, right? But when I reward you for something, you tend to persist in that behavior. The same thing with neurofeedback. So we hone in on that tendency when we train with neurofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
So to train neurofeedback, number one, you need a system that's able to measure the brain's activity. So you record that brain activity. And number two, you need a system that will be able to display or feedback that information of the brain activity back to the individual, right? So that's the second piece of it. So one is a recording system that records your brain activity. The other displays your brain activity back to you. And this is the side of the therapist. The therapist could take two approaches. One is where the therapist can say, okay, now looking at your brain activity, I can see that compared to the general population of normative individuals, so this is too much or too low, right? And now we can automatically set a threshold of normal activity.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like, my brain waves are going like hyperactively and most people's brain waves are calm, then we can go, okay, well, this particular brain wave is too hyperactive. So we want to bring it back to a calmer state. So we're going to reward the brain waves when it starts to go back to this calmer state.
Exactly. That's it. And the question is, how do you reward the brain? So of course, if you come to our clinic or any neurofeedback session, you might not expect to get chocolate for every time you are
with me. That would be great.
It will be great.
For people like me.
I know, and some health nutritionists would know that would be a disaster. But yeah, we know other means of rewarding the brain, right? And one way that actually works with the brain is high-pitched sound or variation in sounds,
okay.
Right? So by the high-pitched sound, and there are several ways this works. Some people, we use a system where you'll be listening to a sound that would vary in intensity or volume.
Mm.
So when you are within the set threshold of normal activity, right, that sound will become louder and louder, right?
Okay.
More like telling the brain thumbs up. And when you are drifting away from that threshold again, of normal activity, the converse happens, the sound becomes fainter. Some people just use the sound cuts in and out. So it comes on when you're there and then goes off when you're. And then we also have a visual component also. And that there comes in the Netflix.
My favorite.
Right? Yes. I've had patients that call it the Netflix session, right? So they come in and they watch Netflix, but that's not the aim. The point is, they're watching Netflix, but there is a digital screen placed over the Netflix video. And what that does is when the patient is within the set threshold, the video brightens out and he or she can see the video clearly. And when they are out from that, or they drift away from that normal activity, then everything goes dark and they can see what they're watching. So with this audio-visual feedback, right, back to the brain over time begins to figure things out. It's going to know, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is the normal range of activity that I'm being encouraged to perform within. And what that would translate, of course, we have another aspect of the changes that happen, which makes neurofeedback, in my own, and I'm sure many of you would accept, it gives it that advantage and edge over pharmaceuticals, is this functioning of neurofeedback at the neuroplastic level, right? Not just, you know, interacting with receptors to make to cause temporary changes. And when those chemical agents are metabolized, then you need more of them to experience the same effect. With neurofeedback, the change is made at the synaptic level.
Synapses being like the neurons are kind of the cells of the brain, and the synapses are the connection space between them, right? So I think when you say neuroplastic, what you're saying is like this actually allows your brain to reroute and reconnect. So we're not just like dumping chemicals that says, oh, you're missing this, we'll add it in. We're like teaching the brain how to reconnect in a way that promotes, in this case, calmness. Is that right?
That's absolutely it. Okay. Because our behavior, the totality of human behavior, if you want to take a reductionist view of it, it all boils down to connections within the brain, right? Synaptic connections. So by synapses, as you rightly said, is that connection between two or more neurons, and the way they communicate is via those synaptic, you know, communication or connection. So one behavior that is driven by a particular synaptic connection can also be stopped by disconnection in those synapses. And a different behavior can be initiated by a different set of connection, neural connections.
Okay. Right?
So the change in those neural connections is what we're referring to neuroplasticity, right?
Okay. So essentially, like, you're wearing a cap or some sort of device that's measuring what's going on with your brain waves. And that's what's feeding it back to, I'm really stuck on this Netflix idea. It's what's feeding it back to the TV screen, which then decides based on if my brain waves are behaving, quote unquote, or not, whether or not I get to see the Netflix. So if my brain waves are great, then that machine that's on my head, or like the little cap that I have on that's measuring that, it's going to feed back like, we're all good here, she can keep watching. And then when I get a little anxious about something, then that screen's going to come over. So over time, my brain is going to learn this is where we need to be. And then the idea is it's going to change connections in a more permanent way, unless I teach it something different.
Right on point. So you have this system that based on this reward over time, the brain learns to adjust or regulate its activity to maximize that reward, right? So what we do then with neurofeedback is that we already know from several years of research, and by years, I mean decades, right, of research, we know what certain brain activity or brain waves correlates to, right? So there are several frequencies. The brain can operate at different frequencies,
right,
depending on our different states of arousal, our different states of alertness, right?
Yeah.
But when you are asleep, you're in a different brain wave or a brain frequency. When you are awake and just sitting in your living room and watching a TV, you are in a different brain frequency. Mm-hmm. And when you are in a classroom where you're supposed to learn something and be cognitively engaged, you are in a different frequency, right?
Right.
So from several research, years of research, we already know to a large extent what these frequencies are and what they drive and what happens to them when they're dysregulated. So I'll give you an example. One is what many of us know as the alpha frequency, which in more technical term, we're going to define that as frequency between 8 to 12 hertz. Now, don't worry about that. When we say hertz, is just how many cycles per second. So 8 to 12 hertz is the frequency that your brain will be operating when you're in a very relaxed environment.
So just alpha is good. We want alpha.
Yeah.
Especially
actually, every frequency is great.
Okay.
Just depending on when you're using it, right? When your brain is actually in that frequency. So if you are asleep and you are still in your alpha frequency, sometimes we get what we call alpha intrusions. Hence, you cannot get really good restful sleep. But then if you're awake and you are in the theta or delta wave, which is a frequency that drives sleep, then you'll notice you're more like in this haze. And some people notice this when you have traumatic brain injury or loss of neuroinflammation. It's like they're walking in this haze, they are spacey, they cannot focus, they are inattentive and all that. Well, that's because you are not operating in the frequency that should drive that level of alertness, right?
Got it.
And a lot could cause that, right?
If you are struggling with anxiety and tired of going in circles, then I have something special for you. I have created a game-changing gift for everyone that is listening. This gift is specifically designed for women who are done living with their anxiety. Whether they are tired of the intrusive thoughts, the sleepless nights, gut issues, the overwhelm, or being unable to do the things they used to love. This gift is specifically designed for women who want immediate action steps. So what I have for you is a guide. It is 5 surprising ways to reduce anxiety in just 7 days. This guide is really great because it gives you some actionable steps. It is not telling you about your anxiety or suggesting random things that you're never going to do, but they are really actionable steps that are going to have an immediate effect on lowering your anxiety. You can find the guide at go.healingjourneyservices.com/5ways-1.
So years and years of research have gone into this for us to know that, yes, these are several frequencies that should be dominant at different states of arousal. So what then happens in dysregulation, right? So let's go back to the alpha frequency. So while sitting in your living room, you should be in your alpha frequency, right?
Right. Hopefully, if your living room feels safe and everything is calm, I should be like chilling out in my alpha frequency.
Yeah, I just want to believe our living rooms are safe, right? So if your living room is out there in the middle of the jungle, then yeah, that would be a different situation. But yeah, if you are living in a safe environment, as you rightly pointed out, then yes, you want to be in that state. Now, if you leave your living room and walk into your vehicle, your car, and you drive out to the express, you are moving to a different state of alertness.
Right. It probably wouldn't be in alpha. At least most of the women that I work with would be like, heck no, Jody, we are not in alpha state driving.
There you go. So there, and it plays well to your survival, right? You are in that state that is actually helping you be vigilant enough to avoid collision with other vehicles, to stay within the traffic regulation. But then what happens if you are in the living room and you are still in that state that you should be when you are out there in the main, in the highway, right?
Right. So my brain thinks it's driving a car down the highway, but I'm chilling out in my supposedly safe living room. But I'm missing the cues for some reason. My brain is not moving into this calm alpha state.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not moving into the calm alpha state, even when you're in an environment that is relatively safe.
Right.
And there's a lot of things that could result in that. One of them is stressful lifestyles, stressful jobs. And these things are, as I said, systematically they develop over time. So you've gotten a new job that pays you so well, but then it's highly, highly demanding.
Right.
That you're working every moment of the day. Even when you are in your bed trying to get asleep, you're thinking about your work, you're planning, you're solving problems, which is the beta frequency. You're there solving problems. You wake up, that's the first thing. You're running to work. And of course, that's going to affect your sleep, which is the time you're supposed to rejuvenate and supply those resources that have been depleted. So sleep is downhill. You don't have enough rest. You don't have time for exercise. Maybe sometimes also diet go down the drain as well, because you're only surviving on what? Coffee and all that, right?
Yeah, so it becomes like a vicious circle, right?
There you go.
Uh-huh.
So over time, what the brain then thinks is relaxation isn't, because now you are in your living room and the brain has forgotten, so to say, how to unwind back to the alpha frequency. Right?
Okay, because I've accidentally trained it that beta frequency is a new norm by accident.
Exactly. That's the right way to put it. So beta frequency, which is the crazy-eyed alertness, is now your new norm, right? And I've had patients that for them to actually relax in air quotes, they have to be doing paperwork, right? They have to be doing a little bit of office work for them to really relax. Of course, you know, that's not relaxation, but that's what they're doing. And they tell you, this is the way I relax is by doing work, right? Mm-hmm. But we know, of course, you can't relax by doing work. But that's what their brain thinks now is relaxation.
Okay.
So you do need to retrain, rewire the brain to a state where actually it can come back to the alpha frequency when you are in a relatively safe and relaxed environment. And just as we've explained how neurofeedback works, you can imagine now that when the brain drifts into the alpha frequency, temporarily as it will do from time to time, will give it a piece of chocolate, right?
Right.
The sound and say, yeah, thumbs up. And then it will drift out from that and back to the crazy-eyed beta frequency. And then we take that reward away, right? Over time, the brain will learn, okay, it's like this crazy-eyed beta frequency is not getting me enough reward, right?
Right.
I'm not encouraged to be here. And then what that will translate to over time is behavioral changes, right? That you will begin to experience again that relaxation. In a nutshell, that is neurofeedback, right?
Interesting. For me, what really stands out about it is there's this whole conception, we sort of touched on it a little bit, that if you're anxious, it's because you're not trying hard enough to calm down and you just need to calm down. And the way that you're sharing and talking about it, it sort of shifts that view and flips it on its head, right? It's not that, I'll use me as an example, it's not that I need to sit in my living room and be like, hey, brain, like this is safe. Like I can continue to tell my brain that, but if it's stuck in that beta frequency, no amount of me being like, let's calm down, is gonna work. So that's what I find fascinating about neurofeedback. There's no blaming. It's like, we'll just retrain.
Exactly. So back to the example you gave of someone telling the brain to calm down. Mm-hmm. So the brain is replying you, what exactly do you mean? Right?
Right.
Exactly. The brain is like, what does it mean to be calmed down? Because it's now in this beta frequency and it doesn't know what it means to be calm anymore. Actually, you have over time taught the brain that the new norm is relaxation. So the only way we're able to calm the brain down is by showing somehow what it should be doing. And that is what now you define as being calm, right? So if we say, okay, brain, calm down, but this is what I mean by being calm. I'm going to reward you when you're doing the right thing, right? And by the right thing, I mean alpha frequency. When you're there in the alpha frequency, I give you a thumbs up. That is what I mean to calm down. Then the brain says, aha, now you're talking to me.
Right.
Because the brain doesn't understand frequencies.
Right? And for most people, it's not teaching, it's reminding, right? Because there was a point where the brain could calm and then it's forgotten. So it's almost like for most people, unless there's traumatic birth experiences and you were sort of always that anxious, wired brain, it's remember what this was like? Is that accurate?
It is accurate for most people, as you rightly pointed. Yeah, it's accurate that we are only taking the brain back to what it once was, right? And that is undoing what we have done over years, right? So we were once relaxed people. And most people will agree with this. They know that their life was different until that life-changing experience. That good or bad, job or a broken relationship, whatever it is, that's really drove them downhill. Yes, they would need that. Now, just to go on that, while you are doing neurofeedback, here's where many people begin to, you know, miss the point, is that neurofeedback is, as I said, retraining the brain. But for the brain to actually incorporate that information, there are a few things that have to be in place. One is diet. The other is sleep. Then we also have a few other relaxation protocols, because the brain will not devote any resource to learning if he thinks you're still in an unsafe environment.
Right.
Because it's primed for your survival. The brain is designed to prioritize your survival over anything else. That's why no matter how interesting that lecture is, the moment the fire alarm goes off, never understand 90% of what happens after then in the lecture. Right. You just want to get out of there, right? Yeah. Same thing if I'm teaching the brain to relax and relax, but then I'm not doing some of these relaxation protocols, some of the relaxation exercises, so to say, out there that will actually get the brain more and more to that alpha state that will be rewarded, right?
Right.
And you can't get neurofeedback as effective as it should.
If right.
you don't take on the right diet, then the brain has no resources to even drive the frequency you want to encourage.
So that's where it's one angle to come in. But if you haven't addressed, or one piece of the pie, right? But if you haven't addressed the rest of the pie, then you've literally just supported one piece of the pie. Wow. And the bigger the foundation you create of a stable body, the easier it's going to be for your brain to be like, oh yeah, okay, cool, I got this. Otherwise, you could be going in circles for a long period of time, just like not getting to where you need to be because the brain's still like, I don't think it's safe to calm down yet, that kind of thing.
That is right on point.
Okay. And so before we wrap up, there's different variations of neurofeedback out there. Now, if somebody is like, this is really resonating with me, I think I want to try it. We've talked about how it's important to look at diet, and a lot of which I do with people, right? The diet piece, like getting the limbic system calm and online and looking at minerals and things like that. If they're feeling like they're ready to try it, how do they find somebody that is properly trained? Like, what do they look for?
Yeah. So one thing is this, anyone that have undergone any form of training in neurotherapy, most of them are smart people, right? So they understand the technicality and all that stuff. They can design protocols and tell you to do this and do that. But what really would determine whether or not you're getting the benefits from neurofeedback is the approach to healthcare, the approach to therapy. One is, are they just focused on the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just focused on, oh, you hit your head and that's the cause of the problem? Oh, you had an accident and that is when the problem started. So we're going to try fix your head. It's your head. It's your problem. The whole attention is being channeled towards the head. And then not just that, because of this one problem resulted in that one dysregulation in the brain. Anyone that knows anything about the brain will know, yeah, that's not true. It doesn't happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to really get the best from neurofeedback, you need that multifaceted approach, right?
Right.
Yeah, the Hoffman Center, we talk about the 7 stages to health and transformation, right? So we're not just looking at the physical body. We're looking at the emotional body. We're looking at the electromagnetic body,
mm-hmm.
the spiritual body. And all this aspect of health has to be addressed for you to be holistic, right? So, and we have these referrals from people. I've had patients that come in here, strange enough, they've done neurofeedback training, and their MAP, which we don't have time to go into what that is, but MAP is just the result you get from neurotherapy assess, shows that they have a clean MAP. But the person tells you, I don't feel like the MAP, right? It's showing it's good, but I don't feel like that. Which tells you like the problem may not actually be stemming from dysregulations in the head. Right? There might be gut issues. There might be issues related to the vagal tone, which means that they need more balance in the autonomic system, which goes back to biofeedback, breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, they don't even need neurofeedback as much as they need just breathing, diet, and sleep.
Right.
Yeah. So someone comes to me, you're working a job that you only have 3 hours a day to sleep, and then you don't have any exercise. Your diet is rubbish and you're coming because you are now experiencing anxiety and you want us to do neurofeedback. No, you don't need neurofeedback. You need sleep and good diet. That's all you need.
Right.
Start from
so
there.
Important, right? Because I think we sometimes forget that, and we are naturally taught to look for that quick fix, like that quick pill.
Exactly.
And in a way, neurofeedback can seem like that, right? Like, oh, look, I just go and I passively sit in a chair,
yeah,
watch Netflix, and then I'm fixed.
Exactly. So many people do that a lot.
Okay.
And it doesn't help because they see sometimes some of these iconic people in the media. They said, I did neurofeedback and now I am really superhuman being. My creativity level is off the chart now and all that. Well, as much as I would like to say neurofeedback can make you a superhuman, it won't, right? It's only going to restore balance to a system that is broken, right? And one way we can do that is, first of all, address the underlying cause of those dysregulation.
Right.
Either diet or sleep, we do have to address those, first of all. And then neurofeedback fits in. And here at the Health Fund Center, we have that multifaceted approach. And if you want to use any other therapist out there, you want to be looking out for that multifaceted approach to healthcare. Are they addressing my sleep? Are they addressing my diet? Are they addressing all of these little pieces there? Let me just back up a little bit. So one person will not address all this most times, right? You might have to work with a nutritionist. You might have to work with a psychologist that will address the cognitive side of things. But to be sure you're in the right hand, they have to set you up with all these systems so everything works together as a unit.
Okay. And it sounds like for you, that's the number one biggest thing. So I know board certified is also important, but
right. Yes.
The biggest piece is how do they view health? And so if somebody wanted to come to the Hoffman Center, that's in Calgary, right? So they can find your website and know that if they're going to do neurofeedback with you guys, it's going to be a piece of a multi-layered, 7 levels of healing layered puzzle, right?
Yes. And I didn't mention about board certification. I want to believe that you're practicing neurofeedback. At least you've done the due diligence of being board certified, right? And my certification is the BCIA, minimum BCIA certification, right? There are others if you go for the QEEG and all that stuff, but the BCIA is the minimum. And yes, when you are here at the Hoffman Center, there are several levels. And in fact, we're trying to work out right now, there's a system in place that because some people, either they don't have their issue, they have more constraints financially, or they have other constraints that limits them from going for the full workup. We have systems that can address that. Maybe you just want to have a checkup that will let you start off something with nutrition and neurofeedback, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can set you up with something that works for you. And even if you don't want to come here, you want to work with other therapies, because it's not just meant to advertise the Hoffman Center, it's meant to educate you. So if you want to work with other therapists, you want to watch out for that, okay, now I know that neurofeedback is not a magic bullet. It's no therapy fix all problem. No, it will not work like that. We do need other therapeutic interventions to work together with neurofeedback to actually maximize the benefits of it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I feel like that was like a really good explanation of what neurofeedback does, right? When people should consider neurofeedback and why. And also reframing, it's not just your fault, right? It's something that's now become automated. So we need to unautomate that wrong automation or shift that automation a little bit. And also it's a piece of healing, right? Everything I tend to talk about is another layer of the puzzle or a piece of the puzzle. So I know you have to run. So if anyone has any questions, they can post them below and I'll just let you know and we can answer those over the next couple of days. Any other parting words you want to leave us with?
Wow, I'll just encourage, because I know if you're already connected to this platform or to this meeting, I'll say you are very much interested in not just the mainstream form of medicine, but other alternative modalities. So yeah, that's thumbs up for you, because now you realize that it's not, our health doesn't fit into a template just taught in medical school, right? You do need to address the body as a whole. We cannot touch on the brain and address the brain almost like it exists in a vacuum away from every other aspect of your body. So that's one thing. If there's anything you should take away from this, is that neurofeedback is just one piece of the puzzle, right? And it has to work with other systems to get you from where you are to where you want to be. That thing, in a nutshell, that's what I'd like to leave us with.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
I'm happy joining us today.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Holistic Anxiety Fix podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts so others like you can learn how to heal naturally from anxiety. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.